It is said, to see many disturb their soul when it desires to abide in this calm and repose of interior quietude, where it is filled with the peace and refreshment of God. Desirous of making it, retrace its steps and revert from the goal in which it now reposes, they draw it out to more exterior activity, to considerations which are the means. This they do, not without strong repugnance and reluctance in the soul. The soul would want to remain in that unintelligible peace as in its right place. A man is deeply pained if, after intense effort to reach his place of rest, he is forced to return to his labor. Since these individuals do not understand the mystery of that new experience, they imagine themselves to be idle in doing nothing. Thus is their struggle with considerations and discursive meditations. They disturb their quietude. They become filled with aridity and trial because of efforts to get satisfaction by means no longer apt. We can say that the more intense their efforts, the less will be their gain. The more they persist at meditation, the worse their state becomes, because they drag the soul further away from spiritual peace. They resemble one who abandons the greater for the lesser, turns back on the road already covered, and wants to redo what is already done. The advice proper for these individuals is that they must learn to abide in that quietude with a loving attentiveness to God, and pay no heed to the imagination and its work. At this stage, as we said, the faculties are at rest and do not work actively but passively by receiving what God is effecting in them. If at times they put the faculties to work, they should not make use of excessive efforts or studied reasonings, but do so with gentleness of love, moved more by God than by their own abilities, as we shall explain later. This example is sufficient at present for those aspiring toward advancement. They will understand the suitability and necessity of detaching oneself at the required time and season from all of these methods, ways, and uses of the imagination. To explain just when these practices must be employed, we shall, in the following chapter, describe some signs which the spiritual person must notice in himself. These signs will indicate that the time and season has come when one can freely make use of that loving attentiveness and discontinue his journey along the way of reasoning and imagination. Chapter 13 of Book 2. To avoid obscurity in this doctrine, it will be opportune to point out in this chapter when one ought to discontinue discursive meditation, a work through images, forms, and figures, so that the practice will not be abandoned sooner or later than required by the Spirit, just as it is fit to abandon it at the proper time, that it may not be a hindrance in the journey to God. It is also necessary not to abandon this imaginative meditation before the due time, so that there be no regression. For though the apprehensions of these faculties are not proximate means toward union for proficients, they are a remote means for beginners. It, too, and spiritual things at the same time. I'm sorry. By these sensitive means, beginners dispose their spirit and habitate it to spiritual things, and at the same time they void their senses of all other base, temporal, secular, and natural forms and images. Hence we shall delineate some signs and indications by which one can judge whether or not it is the opportune time for the spiritual person to discontinue meditation. The first is the realization that one cannot make discursive meditation nor receive satisfaction from it as before. Dryness is now the outcome of fixing the senses upon subjects which formerly provided satisfaction. As long as one can, however, make discursive meditation and draw not satisfaction, one must not abandon this method. Meditation must only be discontinued when the soul is placed in a peace and quietude to be spoken of in the third sign. The second sign is an awareness of a disinclination to fix the imagination or sense faculties upon other particular objects, exterior or interior. I am not affirming that the imagination will cease to come and go. Even in deep recollection, it usually wanders freely, but that the person is disinclined to fix it purposely upon extraneous things. The third and surest sign is that a person likes to remain alone in loving awareness of God, without particular considerations, in interior peace and quiet and repose, and without the acts and exercises, at least discursive, those in which one progresses from one point to another, of the intellect, the memory, and the will, and that he prefers to remain only in general, loving awareness and knowledge we mentioned, without any particular knowledge or understanding. To leave safely the state of meditation and sense and enter that of contemplation and spirit, the spiritual person must observe within himself at least these three signs together. It is insufficient to possess the first without the second. It could be that the inability to imagine and meditate derives from one's dissipation and lack of diligence. The second sign, the disinclination and absence of desire to think about extraneous things, must be present. When this inability to concentrate the imagination and sense faculties upon the things of God proceeds from dissipation and tepidity, there is then a yearning to dwell upon other things and an inclination to give up the meditation. Neither is the realization of the first and second sign sufficient. If the third sign is not observed together with them, when one is incapable of making discursive meditation upon the things of God and disinclined to consider subjects extraneous to God, the cause could be melancholia or other kinds of humor in the heart or brain capable of producing a certain stupefaction and suspension of the sense faculties. This anomaly would be the explanation for want of thought or of desire and inclination for thought. It would foster in a person the desire to remain in that delightful ravishment. Because of this danger, the third sign, the loving knowledge and awareness in peace, is necessary. Actually, at the beginning of this state, the loving knowledge is almost unnoticeable. There are two reasons for this. First, ordinarily, the incipient loving knowledge is extremely subtle and delicate and almost imperceptible. Second, a person who is habituated to the exercise of meditation, which is wholly sensible, hardly perceives or feels this new, insensible, purely spiritual experience. This is especially so when, through failure to understand it, he does not permit himself any quietude, but strives after the other more sensory experience. Although the interior peace is more abundant, the individual allows no room for its experience and enjoyment. But the more habituated he becomes to this calm, the deeper his experience of the general loving knowledge of God will grow. This knowledge is more enjoyable than all other things, because without the soul's labor, it affords peace, rest, savior, and delight. For greater clarity, we shall expound in the following chapter the reasons showing the necessity for these three signs in order to journey on the road of spirit. Chapter 14 of Book 2. As for the first sign, it should be known that there are two reasons almost comprised in one for requiring the spiritual person to give up the imaginative way or sensory meditation when he is unable to meditate or derive satisfaction from it and enter the way of spirit, which is the contemplative way. First, because the person has been granted all the spiritual good obtainable through discursive meditation on the things of God. An indication of this is his inability to make discursive meditation as before, or derive from it any new satisfaction or pleasure. For previously, he had not yet arrived at the spirituality which was in store for him. Ordinarily, as often as an individual receives some profitable grace, he experiences, at least spiritually, gratification in the means through which the grace is obtained. If this is not received, there will rarely be profit. Neither will he find in the cause of that former gratification the support and satisfaction he did before, when he received grace through that means. This agrees with what the philosophers hold. Hence, what is savory nourishes and fattens. Holy Job queries, could one perchance eat the unsavory that is not seasoned with salt? Here we have the cause of the person's inability to consider and meditate as before, the lack of savor and benefit derived by the spirit from this exercise. The second reason is that he has now acquired the substantial and habitual spirit of meditation. It should be known that the purpose of discursive meditation on divine subjects is the acquisition of some knowledge and love of God. Each time a person through meditation procures some of this knowledge and love, he does so by an act. Many acts, in no matter what area, will engender a habit. Similarly, the repetition of many particular acts of this loving knowledge becomes so continuous that a habit is formed in the soul. God, too, effects this habit in many souls without the precedence of at least many of these acts as means, by placing them at once in contemplation. What the soul, therefore, was periodically acquiring through the labor of meditation on particular ideas has now, as we said, been converted into the habitual and substantial, general and loving knowledge. This knowledge is neither distinct nor particular as the previous. Accordingly, the moment prayer begins, the soul, as one with a store of water, drinks peaceably, without the labor and the need of fetching the water through the channels of past considerations, forms, and figures. At the moment, it recollects itself in the presence of God. It enters upon an act of general loving, peaceful and tranquil knowledge, drinking wisdom and love and delight. This is why a man experiences difficulty and displeasure when others, in spite of the calm he is enjoying, endeavor to force him to meditate and work with particular concepts. His experience resembles that of the suckling child, which finds that the breast is taken away just when it is beginning to taste the milk that was gathered from it, and as a result is forced to renew its efforts. Or like the experience of a man who, while enjoying the substance of the fruit, once the mind is peeled, is forced to stop and begin again to remove the mind from the fruit, even though it had already been peeled. In such an instance, he would fail to find the rind and cease to enjoy the substance of the fruit which he holds in his hands. Or this is like turning away from the captured prey to go hunting for another. Many behave similarly at the beginning of the state. They are of the opinion that the whole matter consists in understanding particular ideas and reasoning through images and forms, the rind of the spirit. Since they do not encounter these images in that loving, substantial quietude where nothing is understood particularly and in which they like to rest, they believe they are wasting time and straying from the right road. They turn back to search for the rind of images and reasoning. They are unsuccessful in their search because the rind has already been removed. There is no enjoyment of the substance nor ability to meditate, and they become disturbed with the thought of backsliding and going astray. Indeed, they are getting lost, but not in the way they imagine, for they are losing the exercise of their own senses and first mode of experience. This loss indicates that they are approaching the spirit being imparted to them, in which the less they understand, the further they penetrate into the night of the spirit, the subject of this book. They must pass through this night to a union with God beyond all knowing. There is little to be said about the second sign, for it is obvious that a person at this time necessarily finds worldly images dissatisfying, since even those that concern God, which are more comfortable to his state, fail to satisfy him, as we explained. Nevertheless, as we mentioned above, the imagination usually wanders back and forth during this recollection, but a person does not desire or find delight in this. Rather, he is troubled about due to the disturbance it brings to the gratifying peace. Nor do I believe it is necessary to indicate here why the third sign, the loving general knowledge or awareness of God, is a requirement for discontinuing meditation. Some doctrine has already been expounded about this sign in our explanation of the first one, and afterwards, in the proper place, we will have a special discussion of this when dealing within the general obscure knowledge. This matter will be taken up after our treatise on the distinct intellectual apprehensions. We shall, however, state one reason which manifests how this loving, general knowledge and awareness of God in the soul is required before discontinuing discursive meditation.